From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the sixth day of December 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the commodity markets, not only with Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, but with Ben Proust, too. He's at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa. We'll hear a very interesting discussion I had with Carl Zuloff about farm policy, comparing the 1970s era to the 2000 era, both great eras of prosperity in agriculture, and what changes might come in the future for farm policy. And as we wrap up our discussion today, we'll check in on the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. A nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat for the day finished like this. The December at 637 and a quarter was down 0.75 cents. March at 651, down a penny, and July at 654, unchanged for the soft red. Hard red July, or the harvest month, at 688 and 4.5. That's up a half cent for the day. December corn futures up 424, a penny and a quarter higher. The March at 434 and a quarter, up 0.75 cents. March corn at 442 and 3/4, 3/4 higher. And July contract up 3/4 at $4.49 and 3/4. September 456, up a penny. December corn 463 and 3/4, up 1 1/4. January soybeans 1325 and a half, down 2.5 cents. The March at $13.10 and a half, down a penny and a quarter. And May futures at 1296 and a half, 0.75 cents lower. July at 1287 and 3/4, down 2. August soybeans 1258 and a half, down 0.25 cents. November futures $11.64 and a quarter, 1 1/4 higher. December bean meal at 447.30, that's up 1.20. Bean oil at 40.28, and finished 10 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures from the CME group, that is December contract, 131.42 and a half. Down 22.5 cents. February at 132.85, a nickel lower. April followed suit, down 5 at 133.70. January feeder cattle at 164.47.5, up 35 cents. The March at 164.67.5, 25 cents higher for the day. And December lean hogs, $81.67.5, down 85 cents. February gained 32.5 cents, up 32.5 to finish at $89 even. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, January contract, $97.66. That's up 28 cents for the day. RBOB gasoline at 272 and 2 tenths, a penny and a half higher. Ethanol futures at $1.99 and 8 tenths, 11 and 3 tenths higher. Natural gas at $4.11 and 8 tenths. It finished a penny and 4 tenths lower, and diesel fuel up 7 tenths of a cent at $3.05 and 6 tenths of a cent. Gold futures at $1,229.60 an ounce, down $2.90. U.S. dollar trading at 80.31. That's up 0.08. By the way, the diesel fuel is always the New York Harbor ULSD. That's the ultra-low sulfur diesel contract. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 40% chance of snow, cloudy, a high of 25 degrees, north-northwest winds at 11 to 13. They'll gust all the way to 17 this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy during the evening, then gradual clear. And as it clears, it will get cold. That's pretty par for the course, of course, that is. And it will drop down to 10 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 2 and 7 tonight. Northwest winds at 11 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 20 degrees. But the wind chill values will keep it cold, down below 0, negative 3 to 7 degrees. North winds at 6 to 10 miles an hour tomorrow. Saturday evening, increasing cloudiness, a low of 13 degrees. Wind chills between 1 and 9. And Sunday, a 40% chance of snow after the noon hour, cloudy with a high of 28 degrees, east-southeast winds by then, 9 to 14 miles an hour. Sunday evening, a chance of snow, maybe even some freezing drizzle, cloudy and a low of 21. Chance of precipitation on Sunday evening set at 40%, and on Monday, partly sunny skies and a high of 25 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
On this Friday afternoon, let's check the marketplace on the phone line from Atchison, Kansas, and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. As usual, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. I hope the weather's not hitting you too hard there in Champaign.
Well, we still have 21 degrees outside the studios here. How about you? How cold is it?
We're around 9 to 12 right now, and the winds are picking up as we go through the evening. It sounds like right above north of us about an hour, we're down to about 5 already. So the Arctic air is really pushing in. It sounds like Mount Carmel and those folks down there south of 36 really got nailed.
Yeah, it's not been pretty, and it's not going to turn any better, at least for a while. The temperature is going to stay cold. What's your wind chill like, do you know?
Yeah, it's about 10 below right now.
Phew.
Welcome to Kansas.
Welcome to Kansas.
At least I don't have cattle out there. I felt bad for the livestock guys last time when I was driving down to Leavenworth.
Yeah, hello, Toto. Oh, man. Yeah, the Wicked Witch of the West isn't flowing.
Yeah, the Wicked Witch of the Arctic North, right?
I guess. All right. Let's talk about this marketplace just a little bit. What do you find of most interest in the market for the week?
A couple things. I think even in the midst of the GM rejection
right.
of the traded GM material in corn, we still had the lead month corn give us the third higher week in the last 12 weeks, only the third time in the last 12 weeks we've had a higher close. A 2% gain on the week was the best since August 23rd. I think to myself, without the GM trait rejection and the complete breakdown of the charts in the wheat, thanks to the Canadian crop especially, and that estimate by Stats Canada just ripping the doors off of any of the trade guesses, I wonder what corn could have done in the midst of this really cold weather and in the midst of this very strong export inspection number that we got early in the week. So that was probably the first thing that I really thought a lot about as I traveled. I think the second thing was the fact that we still, going into Tuesday's crop report and the soybeans, are realizing in the trade that we haven't rationed demand enough and that we still may be close to pipeline supplies, that even though we're seeing an expected improvement in the moisture levels in Argentina and Brazil, with already having seen some improvement over the last couple to 3 weeks. So bean fundamentals in South America, Todd, I think, are turning more negative. And the producers that have been sitting on last year's crop, who are notorious for selling in February and March, will probably turn into that type of seller once again and match up with the seasonals if they get the rains that are expected here in the next 10 days.
Yeah, so it's kind of important, I guess, to take a look at the weekly trade, which you started to mention. The numbers finished pretty different than they did for the afternoon. For instance, the January beans, which were off 2.5 cents for the day, actually finished pretty weak. They put in a hook down and were 11 cents lower on the week. That would be the lead option.
Yeah, and this goes back to the meal. I mean, the meal brought the whole market back around on Friday for the beans. The Dease meal made new highs on the close, positive closing day, 447.70. Notice that we're right back close to that 450 level, even though we closed down about $9 or so on the week. It just continues to show us that there's just not a lot of meal out there to be crushed, and therefore the producers are, even though they're selling into the market this week, I think, the end users and the processors are seeing that there's not a lot of supplies out there. And so the trade, I think, does really realize that the trade estimate going into Tuesday's report, at least by Reuters, is right around 150, 153 million bushels. They realize that it could be lower than that, and we could be literally at pipeline supplies going into the first of the year here in the United States.
So what you're telling me is that the bean meal moved up and it made a technical reversal down.
On the day chart,
On the day and the weekly chart both. But that it is at a high level by comparison. Let's see, on the weekly chart since August, it's up from 356 to what, 447. So it's up a heck of a long ways. And you think that it remains in peril at this point. But did I hear you think that also soybean producers might consider making sales at this time?
Yeah, I think they already have started this week. And I talked about that with some of my producers at the seminars this past week. I think the cash flow selling for beans and the fact that we're over $13 in the cash market in a lot of areas has brought out some bean sales. And I think basis reflected that yesterday and today again in certain areas of the country. So I think there was some farmer movement of beans. I think going back to the meal, I note that the meal is always the one that has to come back and save the beans. I guess that's the whole point of what I'm talking about. Okay. The fact that we have Dease meal, you know, almost $10 over the January meal, which is going to be soon to be lead month. I think we really got to be careful. If we lose the meal as far as our support, I think that's where the South American weather and the bull spreads are going to break down. I think we need to be really ready for that. I noted this week that the November new crop beans were able to get back off of that 1140 area low, get up close to 1160, 1165. So it's starting to get back close to levels that I think are worthy of selling.
Okay. Is corn an easier call for you or not? It was an outside up week. And on the weekly charts, finished up 8¾ cents compared to just the daily, which was a penny and a quarter higher.
I think it's easier, Todd, in terms of expecting a move up and the best chance for the corn to have a short covering rally between now and the first week of January, because seasonally we can expect that. I don't think there's going to be a lot of producers selling at this point. The funds are probably getting ready to rotate. The Dow Jones UBS grain index is trying its best to stimulate a buy signal and coming off some pretty weak levels and some support levels that it was able to hold. I can give you five or six different reasons why it looks like to me the corn wants to try and go up in December, and so therefore it looks worthy of wanting to make some hedges on rallies, both old crop 13 and new crop 14. That December is the best shot we have for a good rally, and I think both basis and futures rally at this point.
What do you do for livestock producers?
I think the livestock guys got to really be careful, because we've had a lot of inter-commodity spreading in the corn and in the hogs, buying hogs, selling corn. Live cattle are probably going to be a little more insulated because of the weather now that we've got in the central part of the country. But I think livestock producers and hogs specifically need to be very careful that we don't see some unwinding of these inter-commodity spreads. We held support in the hogs for February this week. But if we go any lower as December goes off the board, I'd be very nervous that the trade might start to see buying of corn and selling of hogs, and that just take over and hurt our profitability.
And finally, I know you watch the outside markets. Anything that has piqued your interest over the last month?
Well, the big news was today, 5-year low on unemployment of 7%. And I think the word next week, and it'll be in this weekend's financial papers, I think, is let the Fed taper begin. And I think the trade will come around to the idea that we will see a taper of some sort this month before we end the year, and especially with the fact that the stock market is still making some fresh highs out there. So that's going to be a major player as we go into the end of the year as well.
Does that portend lower prices for commodities then?
I don't think so, Todd. No. I think that the Federal Reserve is talking about raising the interest rate that it charges banks.
So inflation could creep in.
Exactly. We're looking at maybe a bigger monetary supply, a bigger M2, and instead of the trade thinking deflation is going to take over with Fed tapering, we actually could see the United States, Japan, and China spur some inflation.
It's always great to talk with you.
You too. Have a great weekend. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh, we did. I hope you did too. Thanks so much.
We did too. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mike Zuzlo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is in Atchison, Kansas, and joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget about Commodity Week. We'll record that this afternoon and then post it to our website by about 6 o'clock. Joe Vaklovic is our guest. Our panelists today will include Kurt Kimmel and Brian Stark, along with Dan Zwicker. Should be a great show. Commodity Week up on our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. That always happens, USA Central Time.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
As I'm sure you already know, the United States Department of Agriculture has been and continues to wrestle with the legislation in Congress we generally call the Farm Bill. It deals with nutrition programs and farm legislation. Carl Zuloff, an ag economist from The Ohio State University, follows farm policy very closely. He penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website. I spoke to him about the article and the reasons behind it. It takes a broader perspective, as you'll hear, of the Farm Bill debate.
Yes, the purpose was to take a broad view of the debate and not to think in terms of the individual parameters or are we going to do more with this program or that program, but to try to step back and look at the broader perspective. Obviously, the individual parameters, the individual programs really matter, but it's also, I think, important to keep in mind what is the bigger trends that are going on in the program.
And what might they be?
Well, obviously, as most people are aware, they do away with direct payments, but the, a large share, over 50% of the money that is saved by direct payments, by doing away with the direct payments, is redirected into the crop safety net programs or other safety net programs in the bill. The rest of it either goes to other programs in the Farm Bill or it goes to the paying down the budget deficit of the country. Within that money that is redirected from direct payments to the crop safety nets, a little over 60% of that or 80% of that, depending on whether it's the House bill in the first case or the Senate bill, goes towards what I would call multiple year programs. So programs that are designed to handle multiple year declines in price or multiple year declines in risk, and the rest of it is shifted into crop insurance, which is an individual year because we reset the price every year depending on market conditions.
You had an interesting little note in your summary about a comparison between the some of our analysts here call the go-go years of the 1970s and those of the late 2010s and early 20-teens. How did spending from the government perspective compare in those 2 years?
Those are the two most recent eras of prosperity in agriculture. And I just thought it would be interesting to look at what we were spending on the crop safety net programs at that time. And I had to adjust for inflation because obviously prices are much higher, not just for agricultural commodities, but for all kinds of goods and services than they were in the 70s. So going to what we would call real dollars, and it was constant dollars. But basically we were spending about $6.2 billion a year. We have spent about $6.2 billion a year more in the current farm period of prosperity than we did in the 1970s period of prosperity. So, and that works out as a percentage basis. We're kind of doubling the amount that we spent. Most of that difference can be attributed to the existence of direct payments. Direct payments accounted for over 75% of the higher expenditure during the recent period, the current period, hopefully the current period of prosperity. And I think one of the questions this raises is, economic analysis very clearly indicates that, government program spending will end up in part in the cost of land, will end up in part in the cost of inputs, and it can also create excesses in terms of maybe too high land prices or other sorts of excesses. And I think one of the really interesting questions going forward is, given this much higher level of expenditure on government programs that we've had during the recent last 5 or 6 years during a period of relative prosperity, what excesses have they created, and time will tell as we go forward what they've done. I think it's a really interesting and important question to watch.
Have you looked at it? Is there work that might have researched how much of the direct payment is input into the value of an acre of land?
There is. There's not been recent research, Todd, to that effect, but historically the answer is every study finds that some. And the rate is anywhere from 20% to 80%, and there are people who argue 100% of it will eventually end up in land. The reason that they argue that all of it will eventually end up in land is that land is the most constraining input in agriculture. You have to have land or you can't grow crops. But the studies themselves say somewhere between 20 and 80%. And that's quite a range, and they're really kind of scattered all the way through across that range. But clearly, at least some of it ends up into land, at least some of it ends up into land rent, and maybe a large amount of it ends up in land rent, and a large amount of it ends up in land.
This you did not take up, but do you have cause for concern for the price of farm assets, land in particular, in the coming 5 years?
Well, I think, you know, I think that the price of land, price of farm assets broadly, the price of land more specifically, I mean, we know that one of the key determinants of that is the returns. And if, and I want to underscore the use of the word if these prices continue to decrease or, you know, even flatten out at the levels they are now, we are going to have smaller returns. And one would expect that those smaller returns would eventually filter their way into lower land prices, into lower land rents. How long that will take, that's a very difficult question to answer, Todd. I wish I could answer it, but there will be downward pressure. But that's an if. And, you know, it's easy to look at the prices today and say it's going to occur, but it's really a question of what happens next year, what happens 2015, because I think we've got pretty strong balance sheets right now in general, and that will dampen down the impact of these low prices. So it's really not just that prices are low now, it's what do prices do over the next 10 to 24 months.
Carl Zuloff is a farm policy expert from The Ohio State University, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. You can read more from him on the FarmDoc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on Friday afternoons. Normally, we would talk with Ben Pruess. He's at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility, but is out of the office today. That's all right. We've got some other things to bring you up to speed on. Don't forget that next week we kick off our winter meeting season. On Tuesday evening, we'll be in Mount Vernon at the Farm Credit Services Building. You can find out all the details on our website at willag.org. But along with us will be Gary Schnitke. He'll talk to you some about crop insurance. And then we'll also have Matt Bennett and Sherman Newland. And then the next day, on Wednesday during the day, we'll be at Sikeston, Missouri, with the Missouri University Extension's Regional Corn Meeting. That's in the Minor Convention Center. And Dan Zwicker, Jackie Vakes, and John Bondurant will be with us. You'll need to register for that one. You can find the details again on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's Feast of Nicholas Day, patron of bakers, barrel makers, brewers, and coopers. On this day in agricultural history in 1492, Columbus sighted the island, now known as Haiti and the Dominican Republic. In 1766, Johann Bodmer was born, a Swiss mechanic. He was a prolific inventor of textile-making machinery, including machines that made the process from carding to spinning wool continuous. In 1863, Charles Hull was born, a U.S. chemist. He invented an inexpensive process for extracting aluminum from its ore using carbon electrodes with homemade batteries and sodium aluminum fluoride. Before that discovery, aluminum was considered a precious metal like gold or silver. Afterwards, it went for 18 cents a pound. In 1945, the microwave oven was patented. And in 2006, an outbreak of illness from the dangerous E. coli 0157H7 was reported, with green onions as the suspected cause. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, it is a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And we finished a conversation with Mike Zuzulo earlier in this half hour, and he is in Atchison, Kansas, where it's about 10 degrees, actually 11 degrees cooler than it is here, at least at the time of the programming's airing, around 9 degrees. I guess we're going that low tonight, huh?
That's right. If you look at the forecast for tonight, we're going to get down to 10 degrees, up to 20 degrees tomorrow, and then back down to 13 on Saturday night, and up to 28 degrees on Sunday. So kind of going back and forth there, but staying below the freezing mark pretty much for the next several days. Probably our coldest night is going to be Monday night. We could get down into the single digits, maybe as low as 6 degrees. So haven't seen that in a while.
It's the wind chills that sometimes are worse than the actual temperatures. And tonight we'll be below zero. Will we be below zero on Monday night as well with the wind chills?
Most likely that, yeah, the winds are going to be pretty strong this weekend and on into early next week. So, and it won't take much of a breeze when it gets down to 6
degrees.
Yeah, I
made a note that we went down to, I think, a negative 3 tomorrow night, and there's what, only a 6-mile-an-hour wind maybe. So Monday
yeah,
night,
that's right.
Partly cloudy and a low of 6. Winds, if they die off, I suppose it won't be quite so cold, but it'll feel cold one way or the other.
That's right. Yeah,
We'll get used to it. That's what happens. But this first blast is pretty cold. How often do we get this cold of a blast this early in the season?
Well, it's a little bit unusual. This is a little early start to the winter season. You know, usually it's the second half of December it gets really cold. But we've had a couple of years in the past where we've felt the bite of winter early on, and so I'd say anytime after Thanksgiving is pretty much fair game for winter weather.
Let's look back to something a bit warmer. The month of November is wrapped up geologically. How did it turn out?
Yes, if we look at November, it was colder and drier than average. Our statewide precipitation was 2.6 inches, and that's about almost an inch below average. And kind of same story here in the Champaign-Urbana area. It's very dry for November. So it's pretty widespread dryness, and so that really didn't help us out much on soil moisture. I was kind of hoping we'd get a little farther down the road recovery from this late summer drought that we had across the state. So we're still kind of recovering from that, and stream flows are still a little low for this time of year. So I would have liked to have seen a little more precipitation in November, but I guess that's the way it goes. So temperature-wise, we were about 4 degrees below average, so very cool in November. But we had some pretty big temperature swings, you know, probably that really warm, the warmest weather's on November 17th when we had all the tornado outbreak. And then about a week later, we gotten down into the teens. So big changes in the temperatures across the state.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey. The Prairie Research Institute joins us here on the closing market report for this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension. Stay with us if you can. More agriculture on our home radio station.